call the State Government Finance Committee meeting to order. My name is Sarah Anderson, I'm the Chair of the State Government Finance Committee, and I just want to welcome all of you here today. I appreciate any input that you're able to give us today, but I want to hand it up. We have local legislators here, if they want to give a welcome to Representative Dave Baker, if you kick us off, this is your town.
Yes, it is, and I love this town, and I want to just say thank you to all of you for coming today. This is an important conversation we're going to have about, again, what we can do as a state to provide more choice on our local level with our counties, when we talk about some auditing questions. But again, for me, it's really great to see so many vets here. Here in Loomer, there's such a need for more services for veterans. I have not been able to be on a veterans committee, I'm on some other committees, so this is exciting for me to learn and understand more issues when it comes to vets and the needs that we have. So I'm here to listen and to observe and to really make some good notes and support our team and this committee. And I just, again, want to say how grateful I am for Chair Anderson to bring the group out here, and excited to learn about more issues that we could do for you folks. So again, welcome, and thanks for coming here to Loomer today.
And Representative Miller.
Chair Anderson, thank you very much for coming out here. The rest of the committee members, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedules to come out to Loomer here, Representative Baker's district. I have Swift, Chippewa, Rendo, and a couple townships here in Candy Ohi County, so I count this county as part of my family as well. What a fantastic turnout all of you came out here today to hear some important things. I'm very excited to be able to present today a discussion on my bill, which, if successful, would open a veterans home. We have people that have served the country valiantly in this and courageously in this room, and I thank you for that, and I think this is the least that we can do, is to provide a home that you can go to and have camaraderie and get the respect that you deserve. So thank you for having us here today. This is a real privilege to have this committee come here today.
We've been traveling the state, the committee has, going to different areas to hear feedback on both the county audit issue and also on the veteran issues too. So this is one of our stops that we have, and encourage you that if you don't get a chance to speak today, these guys will more than welcome your emails, as will any of us here on the committee too. That's what we're here for, or letters or whatever form of communication that you want to use. Just a couple of things for mechanics-wise for today's purposes. There are handouts in the back table there, so if you didn't get a chance to grab the handouts, please do so. On top of that, when you come up and testify, this is the table that we're going to have you testify at, and we ask that you sign your name in, because we have to keep record of everything that transpires here for the state, so we need to make sure that we have that on record. We are going to start off and talking about the county audit issue that's under our purview, but before we get into that, I do think it would be helpful for you to get to know who the members are of this committee. So if you want to start with Representative Carlson, if you can introduce yourself and say where you're from.
Yeah, I'm Lyndon Carlson. The district I represent, Crystal, New Hope, and part of Plymouth, northwest suburbs. Just started my 44th year in the legislature.
I'm Representative Michael Nelson. I represent the southern half of Brooklyn Park, and I'm in my seventh term, so in my 14th year.
I'm State Representative Bob Detmer. I chair the Veterans Division, but Paul's under the State Government Finance Committee. And this is my fifth term. I represent parts of Washington County and parts of Chisago County. And glad to be here. And I'd like to just send a welcome from my VFW post in Forest Lake, and also my American Legion post in Forest Lake. And I hear that Wilmer, the wrestling team, is going to be in the state tournament.
Yes, we are.
And in fact, fifth year in a row. I coached wrestling for 34 years at Forest Lake High School. I'll be reffing at the state tournament on Thursday for the individual tournament. So I'll see Wilmer down there.
No talking then. I neglected to tell all of you too, I grew up in Atwater, so this is kind of my old stomping grounds. Wilmer is where we came to after basketball games to get pizza at Pizza Hut and all those good things. So it's great to be back home. So, Representative Pugh.
Yes, so I am second term State Representative Cindy Pugh from Chanhassen, and I represent the area around Lake Minnetonka, nine cities that surround Lake Minnetonka. And I also serve on the Veterans Division. I'm just thrilled to be here. This is my first trip to Wilmer, and this is such an awesome turnout. Thank you all for coming. Really appreciate it.
Good afternoon. I'm Linda Runbeck, state representative from the northern Twin Cities suburbs of Lino Lakes, Blaine, a little bit of Blaine, Circle Pines, etc. And I appreciate the chance to be here to, again, hear some great testimony from your group. I just got my husband to join, I'll say, the American Legion. He's a Vietnam vet. Happy to be here.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Anderson. I represent District 9A. I'm in my second term. 9A it covers Wadena, Todd, and Cass County. I live up on that beautiful place called Gull Lake. And I welcome you all here and thank you for serving. Appreciate it.
We also have with us some staff, too, that will be taking notes for us to make sure we don't forget anything. If you guys want to introduce yourself, Ms. Roberts.
I'm Helen Roberts. I'm a nonpartisan fiscal analyst for the committee.
Adam Seidel, committee administrator.
Jeff Diebel,
nonpartisan post research.
Jim Galvin, DFL caucus research.
Brian Cook, Republican caucus research.
And Kelly Johnson, I'm the committee legislative assistant.
Great. And with that, if I could ask Mr. Kleindl to come forward to the testifiers table. We're going to start with the county audits. We had passed legislation this last year that would allow counties to hire a certified public accountant to perform their audits, something that we already allow school districts and cities across the state of Minnesota to do. We just wanted to extend that flexibility to the counties as well. And we just recently received a legislative audit report that talked about the efficiency and effectiveness of the audits from the county, the state auditor's perspective. But we asked Mr. Kleindl if you wanted to speak to your county experience and give us some feedback. I think that would be helpful.
Well, thank you. Again, my name is Larry Kleindl. I'm the Kennewick County Administrator. Kennewick County, up to its entire history, has always been audited by the state of Minnesota. We're not one of the counties that we're able to use a private firm. Up to this point, Kennewick County has been satisfied with our partnership with the state auditor. However, what we didn't like is that we want the same options that the schools and the cities and some other counties had in having the option of looking at private firms to do our audit. We've never been able to do that. And we feel that from a price standpoint, and to be cost effective, we should have the same right and options as just those other groups that I talked about have. The cost for a state audit for Kennewick County over the past 4 years averages between $77,000 to $97,000. What happens is that we get, they do the audit, we get the bill, we don't know, is it based on how many hours, we get a bill, we pay for it. Some of those years, some of the bills cover from 1 year to another. We're 1 year behind on the audit. So right now, in 2016, they'll be auditing for 2015. Okay? One of the things that we believe that, just like anybody else in the open market, we should be able to price compare what the costs are. We believe that it's hard to compare counties to counties because of all the different grants and stuff we have, and that's what you'll find out was talked about in the state audit. But I think there are some similarities that when you put out for bids, you'll be able to find that. What the legislation did last year, it says the counties have the option to do this. You're not required to do it. And so when that took place, the law was passed, we received a letter from the state auditor for a 3-year contract. And of course we knew the laws changed and we weren't prepared to lock ourselves into a 3-year contract. So we went to the county board and asked, we had a discussion. It was decided we would not agree to the 3-year contract. We crossed those out in the contract. We initialed it, we sent it back, and agreed to do a 1-year agreement. It was approximately 6.5 months later that we heard back during our audit that they accepted our proposal for a 1-year agreement. But we've never seen a letter stating that. We were getting ready for the 2014 audit. They were told that that's what would happen for us. So So some of the questions, where do we go going forward, and what can your committee do to help it? I believe that this fight is between the legislatures and the state auditors. We as counties, we just want the options, but I don't think the state auditor should be taken out on the counties that agreed to do a one-year agreement or would opt out of it. Many may not know, but there are three counties being sued by the state auditor for this purpose. And how those three counties were chosen, no one knows. And so they're going to be forced to defend themselves about why they didn't sign the agreement or they did sign the agreement. I don't know how come they got chosen and the other counties that didn't, didn't get chosen. Like I said, we work well with the state auditors. So it's not about what they do. But what it is about is we want to make sure that taxpayers are getting the best bargain and the best deal. And what we also want to make sure is that people know is that if we do go with a private firm, it does not mean that the state auditor doesn't have oversight. In the statute, it states that the state auditor has the right and the responsibility to review all audits by the private firms. So if a county picked a firm that wasn't doing their job, the state auditor would find that out and it would have to be fixed. So the public is still being safeguarded. There's still that checks and balance. I believe this is a good bill. I think it's a good law now. I think it's something that was well worth doing and is worth the wait to have it done. And now it's time to go forward.
Mr. Kleinel, I've got a question for you. When you talk about it could be as much as a $20,000 swing in the cost of what the state auditor charges you for the audits, can you tell me what that means to your county? Because in St. Paul, we talk about billions of dollars. So when somebody says, well, $20,000, to them, they don't think it's a lot of money. But what does it mean in Candy White County to have a $20,000 swing?
Well, 1% of our levy is $300,000. Okay, so you percentage your property tax, that's you know, almost one quarter of your property tax that could affect, it could go up.
Wow, okay. Members, any questions at all, or?
No,
Representative Carlson.
I was just gonna ask a little more clarification sure. What you mean by a swing. When you reference the 20,000, there was a $20,000 swing. I think you said 77 to 97.
Yep.
Is that the swing you were talking
yes.
about? That wasn't a swing related to what a private auditor might charge versus...
No. And I can give you the exact years.
Okay. I just was curious about... Yep. I think that answers...
In 2010 to 2011, the cost of the audit was $84,390. In 2011 to 2012, it was $79,815. In 2012 to 2013 is $97,553. 2013 to 14 was $76,885. So the year that was $97,000, we don't know why that was a jump. Was it because they did more staff time? They did more work because we had less staff at that time, some turnover? We don't know. We don't get an itemized detailed bill of they spent this many hours in Candy White County.
So they never tell you, I apologize, they never tell you what it's going to be up front or give you an estimate or
no.
all? So from a county perspective, how do you budget for that? I mean, how do you plan ahead for that?
We take a five-year average on
okay.
the budget.
Okay. And you just hope that it gets in that ballpark.
Right.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to maybe thank Larry for your advice that you had given me during this bill that Chair Anderson and the committee have been working on. I know that I'd asked a lot of those questions about how is it affecting Candy, Ohio. You have not had a chance to kind of go do a simulated bill at this point. You know, again, I think you've always said you were happy with the audit report, but you did want more detail at some point to say what is justifying a $20,000 increase from one year to the next. And I know that just to be on record, again, the counties are really getting squeezed for a lot of other services, whether it become mental health issues, family services, corrections and, you know, sheriff's department. So I know that $20,000 in your budget is a big deal, especially when we can get the same service done for the, and again, something that the state auditor will accept as being good accounting practices. So I just wanted to go on record thanking you for your help in having me share this information with Chair Anderson and the team. So thank you.
One of the things that I want to mention that in the necessary report you probably read about county administrators' comments and stuff. One of the comments I made in that report was the timeliness. We're not happy with the timeliness right now. Right now, we have to wait until the state auditor is done with St. Paul, and then when they're done with that, then they start our county. We often don't get our report until late October. We have to have our budgets certified by September for to the state auditor. That means they can go down, but they can't go up. So it's really difficult to use that opportunity. So one of the things that I would want to say is that that has been real problematic. And I think private firms are getting them done quicker.
And Mr. Kleindl, so are you the only county out there that's not receiving their report until October, or do you?
I think, according to the report, there's several of them. And the counties I've talked to, that's pretty consistent.
So it's really not usable information at that point, is what you're saying?
And if there's any corrections, they go through, do your audit. If there's any things that you have to do corrections on, well, your next year is you're already halfway through, and so the correction actually shows up twice in the report.
Members, any other questions or comments at all? Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to speak to this issue at all? Mr. Kleindl, Representative Runbeck. Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kleindl, just wondering, have you, on occasion in the last few years, been able to go out and get a competitive bid, and just for the sake of the information, or is that not considered?
Not allowed to do that. Right now, by law, we weren't able to do that. If you just did that on your own for the sake of doing it, a firm wouldn't give it to you because they knew. They're not going to tip their hat unless they knew it was a legitimate RFP.
Mm-hmm. Representative Rundbeck?
Well, Madam Chair, did our bill fix that portion? I mean, are they now able to go out at least and solicit a bid?
Yes. And what the bill does in essence is it gives them that flexibility. They can either stay with the state auditor if they so choose to do so, or they can seek out a quote from a CPA firm. So it allows them to do comparison shopping, which is something that we've allowed to have happen for our cities and our school districts. And then there was an exemption. 22 counties are already allowed to do this, one of them being Hennepin County, which is the largest financially. So if you're concerned about the integrity of your tax dollars, you would think the one that has the largest money to spend, that would be one that would be audited by the state auditor, but they are actually exempt from state audits, so as are some other larger counties too. So Mr. Kleindl, I really appreciate you coming forward. Have you been able to compare yourself to a county that maybe was exempt and how much they had to pay? Do you have a comparison, or is it kind of too difficult to?
It's really difficult to do. The first time I seen numbers that what they're looking at was let us say the bottom.
Okay.
Because, you know.
So you saw Becker's probably as the.
Yeah, and I started looking at the counties that were comparable size, makeup of us, regional centers, and you start looking at it, and you can kind of see where we're at for price. And Beltran County and some of those counties like that, where we're trying to compare it where they're at.
All right, Representative Carlson.
Well, I was just going to comment. I don't know totally the answer to the question about cost other than the legislative auditor made two points. One was that it was very difficult, going back to the question of comparing, because every county is different. So it's very difficult to compare different counties and what the costs are, even probably a county of comparable size, especially when they're, in my view, going charging an hourly rate if they in County A encounter some problem that requires more in-depth look or something that may generate a few more hours. He also said in the report that there was no way to really compare the quality between a private audit and the public audit. That he just couldn't answer either of those questions, basically, is what he said. So That's what I say, I don't know the answer to the question either, if the legislative auditor really didn't know the answer as to what the most effective way would have been. But he made those two points along with several others.
Well, you know, I think it raises the issue that I think in this coming session, once we start up here in March, I think this committee will be spending some time to look at how the charges are arrived at to try and get a better handle on it, because I can't imagine walking into a store and picking up an item and taking it home with me and having the bill sent home with me without knowing what I was getting, you know, what am I going to be charged for this item. So I'm sure it makes your job as a county administrator very challenging. So I think we'll dive into that issue a little greater here this next legislative session. If there's no other questions, members, and nothing from the public, if you wish to speak, you have to, if you could come to the testifier table and speak to the issue. Otherwise, we'll move on from there. Thank you, Mr. Kleindel. What we have up next, we have Tim, if you can stay here, that's fine, and present your bill. Probably easier for people to hear and say. We're going to have Representative Miller present his bill. The copies of the bill are on the back table if you need one. And then if you have people that wish to testify, we'll have them come to the table too.
Am I looking at Cole Mark?
Yep.
And then Representative Miller, just for the tape recording, if you state your name, you know that you represent the area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. State Representative Tim Miller of District 17A. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, and members for this opportunity to present HF 1414, which is the plan to fund the state's portion of construction of veterans' homes in Montevideo and Bemidji. Part of the requirement is also for the state to fund one-third of the operating expense. That's why we're here today. We're in an era where there are historical cuts being made to our nation's military budget. There have been reports of fraud and poor management within our VA system. I believe we've forgotten those who have laid their lives on the line for our freedoms. Morale within the ranks is very low. As a veteran myself, I cannot accept this. On behalf of my dad, who fought for this country in the Korean War, I cannot accept this. For my son, who now serves in the National Guard, I cannot accept this. We have an opportunity at this time to do what is right for the men and women who gave so much to our country. The camaraderie forged on the battlefield is lifelong. Through this bill, we are simply asking that we give back just a little to those heroes who gave so much. They are asking that we provide them a home in their last couple of years on earth that they can recognize, one that gives them the honor, respect, and camaraderie they deserve. We should provide that to them. It's the least we can do for them in return. With me today, our Marvin Garvey, City Council President, and Angie Steinbeck, Assistant City Manager for the Town of Montevideo. They will present to you today what their plans are and the expected cost to the state of Minnesota. I'd like to thank them for the incredible work they've done for what, the good last 10 years or so, and all the incredible work that many of the people that are here, I thank you all for being here today. So to the discussion, I pass it on to them.
Mr. Garvey or Ms. Steinbach, do you wish to speak?
Chair Anderson, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Angie Steinbach, and I'm the Assistant City Manager for the City of Montevideo, and I'm also the spouse of an Army National Guard veteran. I would like to take a moment to thank Montevideo Mayor Deborah Lee Fader for attending today, and then also all the veterans and the supporters that took the time to come out and show their support for the Montevideo Veterans Home. This is the 10th year that Montevideo has been vying to build and operate a veterans home in our community. Our site is shovel ready. Our project pre-design is complete. The federal government has identified a need for the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs to build and operate an additional 144 beds in our state. We have a federal application for veterans home funding complete and ready to submit to the federal government after state approval. The only thing we have left to obtain is state approval for the initial construction costs and the ongoing operating costs for the home. Senator Conan and Representative Miller worked with the Department of Veterans Affairs to obtain the Veterans Home Fiscal Year 15 and Fiscal Year 16 budget from Laverne. And in your books that we have for you guys, it's on the back of the front cover. You'll be able to see the budget that was provided to them. The Laverne Veterans Home is a 90-bed veterans home. Montevideo is seeking a 70-bed veterans home. Based on these numbers, Montevideo's estimated annual state general fund appropriation would be $3.384 million. In the Laverne budget, you are able to see how the revenue and expenditures are laid out. We are requesting that your committee look seriously at including this in future government finance plans. The initial construction of the home and the ongoing costs need to both be approved for us to move forward. It is tricky because how do you approve a general fund appropriation when the home isn't even built yet? That's the tricky part of it. But your committee needs to support the idea that in the future, operating a veteran's home is acceptable. This is not a new model. There are five other homes in the state to compare what we're proposing. Those five other homes have a total of 860 beds. There's consistently a waiting list of over 1,500 veterans waiting to get into those beds. So 1,500 veterans, 862 beds, even if we add 144, the beds will be filled immediately with the waiting list still being out there. Even if the veterans home is approved this year, we still need to obtain approval from the federal government to move forward. This likely will take another couple of years to gain approval from the federal government. Then, after the federal government approves the project, the home still needs to be constructed. So the timeline for the construction of the project. So we're still looking at, even with state approval right now, a few years out before the construction of the home, and the veterans are able to move into it. We need approval from the state in order to keep this project going. The facts are there. We have invested copious amounts of time into the project. We have continued to do all of our research anytime any questions have been asked, and I hope have come up with responses that are adequate. We've continued to do all our research, and we have invested over $5 million towards this project. Our veterans need and deserve this home, and our passion for this project will not subside. I would like to pass the presentation over to Mark Garvey.
Thank you.
Mr. Garvey, can you state your name for the record?
Marvin Garvey. Chair Anderson, member of the State Government Finance Committee. Again, thank you for allowing us to come today to testify. The beach driving to the Capitol. I'm bringing the whole delegation along. Again, my name is Marvin Garvey. I'm a member of Montevideo City Council, and I'm serving currently my 29th year. I've served 37 years in Minnesota Army National Guard and retired as Chief Warrant Officer W4. I worked 8 years down at the Cedar Street Armory in St. Paul, right below the Capitol, so I could watch all the goings on up there. I'm also a past commander of the American Legion and a vice commander of District 7, and also serve on the American Legion Honor Guard. You have been presented with the operational costs of a veterans home and the $5 million raised for the construction by the city, county, community, and region with land and infrastructure in place. This is the prime location in the state where there is a need for our veterans. This home will allow for more frequent visits from their family so they don't have to travel a long distance. We also have a community outpatient clinic, which is a cost saving for treatment for our veterans. Our CBOC currently serves 2,440 veterans, and there are 728 that are served through telehealth and home health care. On February 9th of 2015, we met with Commissioner Shelton and his staff from the State Department of Veterans Affairs. At that time, we were informed there are currently 144 beds available for construction. In addition, the criteria had changed from 12 beds to 10 beds per household unit. And on page 36 in your book, there's kind of a little pre-design on there what that would look like. Based on the number of beds available, our architectural firm has developed a new pre-design incorporating these changes with a new 70-bed design. Also incorporated will be a household unit for 10 females. Yellow Medicine County, who is adjacent to us and is a large supporter of our home, has the Upper Sioux Agency within its boundaries, and this home would also provide places for our Native American veterans population. We currently only serve 1% of the veterans in the state. These veterans left their home, wives, children, parents, and grandparents to serve their country.
many of them fully realizing that many of them would not return. During all wars and conflicts, they endured undue hardship, severe wounds, loss of arms, legs, mental disabilities, and the like. Today, unless you have a spouse, son, or daughter in harm's way, there is not too much we sacrifice for these men and women in combat. Yes, we hear reports almost daily about our war efforts, but we go home, go on vacation, etc. Unless we have relatives serving or involved in some other way, we do not give it much thought. When there's a combat fatality, we show concern, line funeral routes, and wave flags. And we should be doing that, but soon forget the sorrow and sadness in that soldier's home. We must also remember the number of casualties from Iraq and Afghanistan is not the final number. Almost daily we read about a soldier that committed suicide. They're also casualties of combat. In addition, we are under the assumption that our military involvement was decreasing. But now ISIS has raised its ugly head. We are currently providing air support and advisory, but how long before we send in ground troops? We still have the Minnesota National Guard, the Army Reserve soldiers deploying monthly in support of defense of our state and nation. In addition to that, we have many active duty soldiers that call Minnesota home. I fully understand the financial commitment that the state of Minnesota will be obligated for. This will be the 10th year that we have appeared before your various committees to support the construction of a veterans home. During that time, you have constructed the Twin Stadium, are working on the Viking Stadium, and approved the $20 million for St. Paul Saints. We realize these venues enhance and improve the state of Minnesota. During the same time frame, our local American Legion Honor Guard provided military honors for more than 180 funerals for our deceased veterans. And that is just in the immediate Montevideo area and does not include the rest of Chippewa County or the Jason County. They took the oath to serve and defend. Our veterans deserve your support. They lay their life on the line for defense of the state and nation. And we must also show we appreciate their efforts on our behalf. Montevideo is the home of the 1st Battalion, 151st Field Artillery, which was the longest serving National Guard unit that was deployed to Iraq, and they also served a second deployment. They had three casualties during that first deployment. The National Guard Army in Montevideo is closely located to the proposed site, allowing the ability of these soldiers to interact with the residents. I encourage each of you to visit the Department of Veterans Affairs website and look at the video that have veterans' homes in Minnesota. Our veterans need their home. It is our responsibility to provide for them as they so honorably sacrificed for us. Here they can visit with their counterparts and have something in common to talk about. No one understands these sacrifices while in combat, and only another veteran understands their feelings. As you can also vividly see on the front of our proposal, we have met all requirements for construction with the exception of state approval for bonding and ongoing operational costs. We have demonstrated the need. Now we need you to follow through and give them the support they so richly deserve. Please pray for our veterans and soldiers daily. God bless America and the state of Minnesota. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Garvey. Members, are there any questions for Ms. Steinbach or Mr. Garvey?
Madam Chair,
Representative Detmer.
We should probably introduce Mr. Johnson. Ben Johnson is here from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. He's our legislative director. And I do have a question for Mr. Johnson.
Before we do that, though, I actually have a question for Mr.
Garvey.
We do have Mr. Johnson is going to come up next to give us some feedback. But for Mr. Garvey, can you... Remind me again, what is the closest veteran home to you?
Laverne, Minnesota.
And how many miles? Can you give me a mile? Do you know?
Just a little over 100.
Yeah, it's 2 hours.
Yeah,
that's
2 hours. Right.
26.
And Fergus Falls is to the northwest, and that's a little further yet.
And can you refresh my memory again, too, on the numbers of veterans you anticipate that would be able to be served at the Montevideo home if it were built?
70 beds,
but I mean, how many veterans do you have in the area that could potentially be served over the years by the Montevideo home? And I apologize, I can't remember the number.
It's over 12,000 on page 18.
On page 18.
And it breaks it down there for the veteran population. And I'd also like to just note, this does not include spouses.
Say it again?
This does not include spouses that are also eligible.
Right, okay. Perfect. All right, thank you. And we're probably going to have you stick around there if you don't mind. Mr. Johnson, the feedback from the department, if you can give us some feedback, and then Representative Detmer has a question for you, too.
Madam Chair, Mr. Garvey, Ms. Summitt, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate the effort that the city has put in. Ben Johnson with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. You'll have to forgive me, I came on board in this capacity rather recently. We had a promotion within the agency. Mike McElhenney, who's been working with you in the past, was promoted to Chief of Staff within the agency. So I took over about 6 weeks ago. I've been with the agency for about a year and a half. Six-year Navy veteran, served twice, deployed twice to the Persian Gulf, served in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. So I can appreciate what you're providing, and I appreciate your time and effort on this. The agency's position is that we don't have a horse in the race in terms of where a new veterans home or veterans homes would be placed. We've seen the efforts from various parts of the state in terms of trying to get a project shovel ready. We understand the work that's been done on behalf of the veterans in the community trying to accommodate the needs, and very much appreciate the support of state government finance and the local veterans community. The federal process, the only slight correction that I'd like to make is that we do not currently have a federal application for Montevideo Veterans Home. The agency had submitted one about 7 years ago, six. Not sure exactly when it went in, but we withdrew it in April of 2013. The application that was in place was submitted prior to the phase 1, 2, and 3 refurbishment of the Minneapolis home.
Robin Galstead, we just resubmitted it last year.
Okay.
Yeah, with those new requirements.
Okay.
But Mr. Johnson has the VA submitted. It sounds to me, does the VA have to submit it, or can the...
No.
And so, Ms. Steinbach, you're saying that you guys were able to submit it prior to Ben coming on board?
Yes, we have it laying on Commissioner Shalazo's desk,
yes,
waiting for the state bonding for approval. Then it'll go to the VA.
So it hasn't been submitted to the Fed?
Correct.
No.
Okay.
It's ready for submittal.
Right.
We work with Robin Galstead, who's now moved on.
She has.
Yes.
that.
The process for getting federal support is as they laid out. It needs to be there doesn't need to be, but if it receives preference, if there's a matching amount of money from the state or from local communities, the 65-35% split is what's referred to there. The federal VA allocates a certain amount of bonding construction dollars, and the process is that starting anytime before about February 1st, you put an application packet together. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs would be the one submitting the application for funding for a new veterans home. We submit it to the federal VA. They go through their allocation process, and the way that it's broken down is the 2014-15 construction budget at the federal level was about $285 million, and they fund projects based on safety and security, received the priority 1.1 assignment designation, go through all of the projects that are things like fire suppression updates, lift equipment for veterans with getting in and out of bathtubs, having assistants get them in and out of beds, things like that. Those are the projects that get funded first. A new construction, which is what this would be, falls at priority level 1.7. And so we can bond, we can apply, we can have all of our information submitted, but it's dependent upon the federal VA and where we fall on that priority list to designate whether or not they can, or to determine whether or not they can fund the 65% that we're requesting, that the state would be requesting to help with the construction of the home. once it leaves our hands, all we can do is continue to submit any additional information that the federal VA requests. There's not a whole lot that the state can do to move ourselves up the priority list beyond 1.7. So it's simply a pot of money that gets spent down, and if the state is in a position to accept federal funds, if our proposal and application gets to the top of the list, then we get that allocation. But the crux of the matter is that bonding, state matching funds, and local support is exceptionally important. Having a completed application in front of the Department of Veterans Affairs at the federal level is helpful. The money allocated by Congress for construction projects for veterans' homes is something that's kind of out of our control. So we are exceptionally pleased that there's this much community work. We understand that the desire and the need within the state, the 140-bed, sort of the cap for the state is 1,058 beds. With the construction that's happening at the Minneapolis campus, once that is completed, there is an opportunity for beds in outstate, greater Minnesota, and the agency is more than happy to help get this through the process and get us in front of the federal VA.
Well, Mr. Johnson, so when you submit your request to the VA, that includes the health and safety and everything else, I'm assuming that the feds require you to prioritize your request. Where would this fall in your priority?
Well, if it's an application for new construction, then they prioritize it as new construction. If the project is health and safety upgrades for existing beds, then it gets bumped up to a higher level. So our refurbishment and updates at the Minneapolis home were funded partially because there were health and safety issues. It was not only new construction, it was refurbishment of existing beds. And what it came down to is we were high enough on the list in the 1.1 category that other states didn't have all of their information in front of the federal VA, so they basically fell down the list and we moved up, and there was sufficient money left in the pot to pay for some of those upgrades. New construction, which is what this would be, sort of meeting that 140 bed deficit, there's no way for us to get it. I don't believe there's a way for us to get it out of the 1.7 category. That is new construction for new beds. Okay. Does that answer your question?
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and Mr. Johnson has basically answered all of my questions. I think it was important that the people see that we can do everything we can within our committee and with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and getting all of our ducks in the order, but we're really dependent on the federal VA to prioritize our requests. And I think Mr. Johnson really spelled it out well. I think it's really important that people understand that. It's not just the MDVA, it's the federal that has a lot to say with new homes. And they deal with the whole country. They deal with the whole country, the requests. And I have no idea how many are requests from other states and so forth, but I know we have three or four requests right here in the state of Minnesota. And my question for Mr. Garvey, have you contacted our Congress people and senators on this issue?
Yes, I have. Representative Dittmer. In fact, I got the airplane waiting with the engines running as soon as the bonding is approved to the state to go out there and meet with the whole group.
Madam Chair, my question, have you already contacted them?
Yes, okay. Yes, we have. We've talked.
That's good. That's good.
Representative Miller.
Madam Chair, members, as Mr. Johnson said, they have no horse in the race, I believe you said. So the question that comes up, why Montevideo instead of other locations, and even really why do we have Bemidji included as well. I won't go too into depth, but I want to touch on those. First with Bemidji, when we presented this with 140 beds, the way that I understand the system works, first of all, to be honest, it's problematic to just build 140 bed. Plus, the veterans here, people that represent this, also understand that there are needs in other parts of the state. So we kind of teamed up with Bemidji. Now, why Bemidji? That points to why Montevideo as well. this is a very complicated application process and a very difficult journey. The fact that they have 10 years into this is a testament to all the work that needs to be done. This report that they put together, you update this annually, correct? And oftentimes they have to put new money into pre-design each time that they do this. There's significant money, there's significant buy-in. The fact that Montevideo is willing to put in Chippewa County or willing to put in own stake is a testament to all the work that this requires in order to do this. I know that last year, which is my only example of what I've seen, I've heard of some other cities in the past, Wilmer itself tried for a while, but they kind of, it just takes so much. Some of the people that are presenting bills as alternative opportunities, I respect my fellow representatives, but I also believe that they're just saying, well, we want it here too. And I don't think that they can come to the level of this. Not only is this a detailed report that, again, needs to be updated every year, but when we had the Senate Bonding Committee come out this last fall, they gave an A-plus presentation. You heard some of it here. They gave an A-plus presentation in the city council chambers, and then they all jumped on the bus together. And I looked at one of the senators, and it was a rainy night, late fall. And I said, I bet you there's going to be over 100 people out there. And he says, why on earth would anyone be out in the rain? It's just an open field. We go out there, and there was about 150 people that were out there, close to 200 people that came out for that. That shows the level of commitment not only that this town has, but that's the level of commitment that's required in order to do this. So you don't have the decision-making process as far as like bonding goes, but I want you to understand the big picture of why we're doing this. It's very important for everyone to understand that, so thank you.
Sure. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I have a couple of questions. One of them deals with the criteria. And I was on the Capital Investment Committee a couple of years ago. We had a hearing, for example, in Brainerd. And one of the points that they made was the great distance to the current vets' homes. We just heard that here, that it would be a couple of hours at least. And if you went up to Fergus Falls, perhaps even more. Is distance part of the criteria at all, either from the standpoint of what the state might recommend or the feds? And the other reason I raise this question, it's a different state, but my wife's father-in-law was a World War II vet, qualified to go to a veteran's home in the state that they lived in. The veteran's home was literally on the other side of the state, which created a real problem for his wife, who was going to be remaining in the community, my mother-in-law, and the ability to visit her husband when he was in need of nursing home care. So the end was that they chose a local private home, even though they would have qualified for a veteran's home, simply for the ability for her to be able to visit and see him during his long-term care. So the fundamental question I'm asking then is distance at all considered? Because if you're the spouse of somebody that has to travel every time you're going to visit 2 hours or more, round trip 4 hours, that doesn't work very well for an elderly couple.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson. My understanding is that distance traveled is something that they consider, and it's a part of the application process, but I'm not sure that it is. I'm not sure it's weighted in the way that you would maybe hope that it would be weighted. But I am not certain about where that falls. The criteria of even establishing what our cap is for beds in the state is a pretty convoluted piece of calculus, and I know that a lot goes into it, but I don't have a specific answer to that question about.
Madam Chair, maybe a comment. Maybe we reference visiting with the congressional delegation. You know, Minnesota's a large state. I think we're the seventh largest state. So maybe encouraging them to build into the criteria of where homes are located, distance maybe be elevated to a higher level. That would certainly benefit, I think, Minnesota. The other comment I was going to make, it wasn't really a question when I said I had two. Years ago when we were looking at the location of our colleges and universities, the public colleges and universities, distance was part of the criteria, and the state decision was that every resident of the state was going to be within a certain distance of a state college, university, or technical college, which you've got two right here in Wilmer with, well, now they're merged, but the community and technical college. I think the distance ended up being something like 30, 35 miles, whatever that criteria was. The last community college that we built using distance as a criteria was Cambridge, because it was located halfway between the Twin Cities and Duluth, and there was really a pocket there where there wasn't any higher ed institution that was readily available for the people that lived in that area. So we opened what we call the Cambridge Center, which is pretty much a campus today. I only point that out is that we are a big state, and when we're dealing with public policy, we have to devise ways that public services are available to everyone in the state. That was a higher ed example. We're now talking about making sure public opportunities are available for the veterans throughout the state of Minnesota.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Garvey.
To address distance, I draw your attention to a report that was done by the state in July of 2009. It was prepared for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Page 1, mandatory characteristics established by federal law, be at least 100 minutes calculated travel time from existing home, the federal requirement. So we meet that. Be within 60 minutes of calculated travel time or reasonable travel time for resident staff at the existing community outpatient clinic. So we meet to, it's mandatory where the locations are. This report gave the home that met those requirements.
Thank you,
so, Madam Chair, just so I'm clear then, you're saying that what I was raising, the question that it already is a mandatory requirement there be certain distances.
One of the requirements.
Well, that's what I was asking, if there was anything, my original question was, is there anything in the criteria that deals with the question of distance? So you're saying yes.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's in the application.
And I think, Representative Carlson, as we found in the other locations that we have, and as Mr. Johnson pointed out, the cap that we have of 1,058 beds, it sounds like it's probably a little more arbitrary. Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, I wouldn't say arbitrary. I would say that the calculations that the federal VA used to allocate beds per state have to do with trends in veterans aging out, where they live within the state. I don't know that that's part of the equation. The 100 minute drive time is sort of a minimum. You don't want to be any closer, but to Representative Cross's question about, you know, don't want them to be driving 2 or 3 hours. It's something that our agency is aware of, and the other part of it is staff. Do we have a community with enough staff, sort of competent in healthcare, nurses, clinicians that can staff that? And I haven't seen the report, but I'm sure that she's got some.
I saw that. She has all the staffing figured out.
Actually, Madam Chair, this is the criteria for the application. Everything is in there.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess this is from Mr. Miller, or Representative Miller, and I think he touched on some of this. A few years back, I remember former Representative Junkie doing an impassioned speech on the floor about why he was going to vote against the bonding bill, because there wasn't money in it for a Wilmer site. So I think you mentioned a little bit, Wilmer just got wore down and dropped out of it. Why Montevideo over Wilmer? What makes Montevideo a better site? And I guess that's my first question.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson, I cannot necessarily tend to why not Wilmer in that context, as opposed to, I think I heard Brainerd earlier there. I know there's been some other towns. This process is really somewhat a battle of attrition. It's somewhat of a you have to be in it, again, as you can see, for a very long time to get to the point. Some of the other things that are critical, I don't know if they're by law, they have to be as part of the application, but the truest sense of the word shovel ready needs to be there. You need to have the property, which owned, I believe. You have to have the property owned, which they have owned. You have to have a pre-design in place, which you see in there. Perhaps one of you can, Ms. Steinbach, I don't know if you can tell about how much money that you the city has spent towards pre-design and other annual expenses to date, which have, to be honest, been required. These are not labors of love. These are things that have had to been required over the years.
Paycheck, bottom of paycheck.
I'm Ms. Steinbach. $152,000 have been spent out of pocket, and $4.88 million has been raised.
So roughly $5 million is what we're talking about.
5.032.
Okay. Representative Nelson, follow up?
Well, I guess my other question, I commend you. You're doing a good job of keeping your nose to the grindstone and getting it, you know, pushing this through, because I know this stuff takes a long time, and it's unfortunate that that does. But I guess my other question I have is, I've read some stuff recently that talks about, instead of building homes, that it might be more cost effective to put veterans in regular nursing homes in the community so they'd be closer to their homes and their families, so they wouldn't have these long drives, and it would save the state money and the federal government money from the long-term operation of these homes. And I guess, why not go that direction? I mean, we heard in the earlier presentation about the state auditor that the county want to do it because it's go to the local audits because they're more cost effective. Why don't we want to look at this as a way of filling that gap of the beds that aren't there? I know I'm dealing with my mother-in-law who's in a nursing home, and he said, I know it's difficult finding places to put them and getting the care that they need. So.
Mr. Garvey?
I really appreciate your thoughts. The federal government does not allow that. You'd have to change federal statutes. And like I said in my presentation, veterans want to be with veterans. And so they can talk to things in common. You talk to somebody in a nursing home that's never been a veteran and been through the things they've been through, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. You got to have that camaraderie. That's why Legion Club, VFW clubs, you get that camaraderie with the veterans communicating together and working for a common cause.
Representative Nelson, any other questions? Yes. Representative Demmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to piggyback on your last statement, Mr. Garvey, I know I've talked to a lot of veterans that have come into our veterans division, and that statement you just made is really important, because veterans do want to spend you know, basically our five veterans homes right now is your last deployment, okay, put it that way. It's your last deployment. And they like to spend that time, and the way the veterans homes are being remodeled and so forth, it gives it a more family atmosphere within the veterans home. And I really believe that that's important. Now, there are some private nursing homes that do have been certified by the VA. And it takes a lot of jumping through hoops to be certified for the federal VA to meet the same standards as our five veterans homes. So they are out there. And there's been talk about maybe some of the private homes building wings for veterans. That's out there. But I would say if you talk to the veteran community, probably the veteran community would say we want to have veterans homes spread out around the state. So I just needed to touch base on that.
Representative Miller.
Madam Chair, just to kind of drive that point home, my dad was unable, him and my mom were both, he passed away first, so my mom was alive when he was still here. They were unable to get into a veteran's home, and I know that firsthand. What I saw was as a man who experienced things that not a lot of people experience, and not all of it's good. I believe it changed my dad. And for him to be able to have those people that he can share those things with, you're also looking at a generation, especially when it comes to the men, that they don't exactly share things. And so this is a great opportunity for them to have that camaraderie, the ability to, and I guess with my initial statement, I want to emphasize again, I know we need to be very careful. I'm a person that's very careful of how we spend state dollars. That's a very important thing to me. But we're talking about people that quite literally put their life on the line for all of us. And I don't, in the big picture, view this as too large a request or too large of a demand for us to be able to give them a little bit back in that way.
I have a question for Mr. Johnson. So you have to give requests to the state of your bonding priorities. Where does this fall in your bonding priorities? Was this submitted to the governor's desk for the overall budget? Was this part of the governor's budget then too, or where did it fall? Can you help me out?
Madam Chair, the State Department of Veterans Affairs didn't include any, to my knowledge, didn't include any construction dollar bonding for veterans' homes. Our focus was on repair and betterment dollars for the existing homes, continued operating costs, and the large ask on our part is the repair of the truss bridge at the Minneapolis Veterans Home, which is sort of a safety and a health issue for us. There's only one access point to the campus there now because that truss bridge was closed. So those are the items that the state and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and Governor Dayton have focused on behalf of veterans and veterans' homes.
And Mr. Johnson, so what is your overall bonding request dollar?
We requested just over $5 million in repair and betterment. $7.84 million for the truss bridge project. Might be shaky on those numbers, but I believe that was what the governor supported, and that's what our agency is pushing for.
So a total of $12.8 million.
I believe that's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. And then operational cost-wise, what's the feedback from the Veterans Affairs on operational costs if this home were to be built here or if there's one to be built anywhere in the state? What is the feedback from the Veteran Affairs on that?
Madam Chair, the numbers the numbers that were cited by the other testifiers are numbers provided by the and so Department of Veterans Affairs to Senator Thunen for a 90-bed home in Laverne. That's the most accurate. In 2015 actuals, total payroll is $7.978 million. Total non-payroll costs for the Laverne home was $2.323 million for a total expenditure of $10.302. That's for approximately 116 full-time employees at that home. Administrative and healthcare, custodial, janitorial, food service. Those are the numbers that we sort of put. That's a good baseline for us for a 90-bed home. Theirs would fall a little bit short of that with a 70-bed home, I believe, is the local request.
So, Mr. Johnson, if I heard you right, you're saying $10.3 million for a 90-bed home on an annual basis or biannual basis?
That was the 2015 number for an annual.
Annual basis. Okay. All right. And I don't know, Ms. Roberts, did you want to go over the fiscal note at all? Or?
Madam Chair and members, I can note that we did have a fiscal note done on this bill in the last session. So one thing just to think about is that if you look at the fiscal note on the last page, page 12, I think it's in your packets, the department at that time was assuming that because of this process that the home would not go into operation until 2020. So that they actually did a calculation that then added inflationary costs to it and came up with an estimate for a general fund cost of $5.25 million per year. But that would be looking into the future. And as you know, as we discussed in this committee, the department has faced rising compensation costs, so they may have different, even some other thoughts on it at this point.
Okay. And Mr. Garvey, did you want to comment?
I was going to address that also, but she's in the ballpark because we're putting 3.3 based on today's prices off to Laverne home.
Right.
So that $5 million is being the ballpark by 2020. The way costs go up.
Right. We see that, yes. Okay. Members, Representative Rumbach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you've done a wonderful job here of putting together a great packet. I'm noticing a number of supporting entities that have committed, you know, some kind of support. I mean, can you monetize that, or is that, I mean, how will that support manifest itself? Is that after the building is completed?
Ms. Steinbach.
Thank you.
On page six, that's all dollars, that's cash.
Right.
And then on page seven, that's the regional commitment support of veterans home proposals. Some of them have money towards the project, some of them have commitment letters, some of them just have overall support for the project. But that's why we broke out the dollars wise versus the overall community support wise and organizational support.
And then, Madam Chair, just another question. I am on the bonding committee, and we've done a few tours around the state, and I'm just interested in sort of the, you know, average cost per square foot. And I think this is about a $310 cost per square foot. Does that, are there any guidelines as far as that for the state Veterans Affairs Department? I think Camp Ripley, if I'm not remembering, they built a new facility a few years back, and that was less. So, I mean, I don't know. Is this the right number for a vet's home, or, you know, is it anything you care about?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, obviously something that we care about. I don't know the number, the per foot for construction of a new veteran's home. I don't have that in front of me. Camp Ripley expenditures are not, that was not a veteran's home. It's a construction tenant in general, but I don't have an answer for you. I'd be more than happy to get that together and provide it.
Representative Rumbach.
Thank you.
Mr.
Garvey,
Madam Chair, if I address your request here. This redesign is based on the federal government's requirements, how a home should be built. And like noted, we were 12 beds to a unit, now we're reduced to 10. So that kind of changed overall increase in cost again too. Mm-hmm. But it's all based on federal designs and requirements that our architect designed this home on.
Okay. So that could change the price. Mr. Johnson, do you want to comment on that? Madam Chair,
not on this, I'd like to clarify. So the total expenditures that I put at 10.302, that includes the federal per diem, the 70% per diem, the resident maintenance charges. So the state general fund appropriation for 2015 was 3.405. So that's.
So you're saying when all funds considered, all tax dollars,
total,
it's going to be 10.3 million when you include the federal dollars. But the state share of that, as Robert says, is probably going to be around 5.25 with inflation considered in 2020. Right?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from members? If not, I'd like to open it up to anybody else that wishes to testify for or against this bill. Okay, go ahead. Welcome. You're such Minnesota nice people. We wait to see if anybody else raises their hand. If you could please state your name for the record and who you represent.
I'm Trisha Appledorn. I'm the Kanawha County Veteran Service Officer.
Oh,
I've been employed here for 9 years. So,
and Trisha, what was your last name?
Appledorn.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I first want to start off by saying I'm not here to make any enemies. So I just, as a Kanawha County Veteran Service Officer here in Wilmer, of course, I have concerns with it being built down in Montevideo. My concerns are that I've heard by going to quarterly meetings in St. Cloud, employment numbers up at the Montevideo CBOC clinic. Have you guys done research on how you'd be able to staff a veteran's home?
Yeah, we represent.
Ms. Steinbach?
Yes, we have represented in our plan. That page. We just had Dee complete a new employment analysis on January 22nd of 2016, and that showed that there's an adequate workforce with 232 individuals that are seeking employment in healthcare and residing in our area.
And is that page 57, Ms.?
Correct, yeah. 57 okay. And 58.
Okay, and Ms. Appledorn?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Has anyone looked into the statistics of the Montevideo CBOC clinic, or like patients going up and increasing?
They're increasing all
Mr.
the time.
Mr. Garvey.
Because the recent one, what was it, I quoted 2,200, 700. VSO, Coli, where are you? He could come up and testify to that. Look at what county.
Welcome. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
My name is Tim Coli.
I'm the Chippewa County Veteran Service Officer.
Welcome. Please proceed.
I was told when I took this job 5 years ago that the Montevideo CBOC was projected to close after 10 years. They didn't think there'd be enough veterans to keep it open. They've added a doctor since I started going there less than 10 years ago. So the numbers are increasing constantly.
Okay. Ms. Appledorn?
Yes, I look at the Wilmer area. St. Cloud doesn't have a veterans home. They do have an extended care unit there, but you have to meet certain criteria to get in there. And if you look at the Wilmer area, in my opinion, you just have a broader population of veterans. We have 3,300 veterans in our county. I'm not sure off the top of my head how many you have down there.
About 850.
Ms. Appledorn, Representative Nelson had mentioned that earlier that a previous legislator had tried to advance this, but then it sounds like Wilmer kind of stopped pushing forward on this issue. Can you kind of walk me through that process? Is it because, you know, local dollars weren't able to continue that commitment of studying it? Or fill us in, what's kind of the situation? Because I do know it's a costly proposition to have the design plans in place, holding onto the property and so forth. So can you tell me kind of where you guys are at? Or, you know, maybe you're still pushing it, but just haven't been, where are you at on it? Can you help me out?
Well, a couple of years ago when we brought this to the Capitol before, we were just kind of told after that there wasn't going to be any new veterans homes being built anytime soon.
Okay.
And that was kind of off the record. And that
and
was
what
kind
year
of
was that?
I'm sorry?
What year was that, Ms.? Do you remember?
2016. I'd say 2008 or 2009.
Okay. Okay. And then what else kind of happened? Can you help us out?
Well, I think we were just kind of waiting to hear if the state was going to move forward with a veterans home until we were going to start working up again. That's why I have the utmost respect for all the work that you guys have put in and kept doing and kept fighting for our veterans. So I really don't, I don't want anyone to take it the wrong way. I just feel in my heart that we just have a broader population here that could keep a veterans home whole and serve more people.
Well, you know, I think that's the part of the challenge that we have as a state is, you know, we're kind of hogtied, if you will, by the feds and what they decide they will or will not do. And I think that's a big challenge for us. And then also, there are many communities, as Representative Miller pointed out, Montevideo is not the only one that is looking for a veterans home. We do have a request out in kind of the Bemidji area. I think Brainerd has one. Down in southeastern Minnesota, they have a request. And I think it all goes down to the issue of veterans not wanting to travel. You can't blame them, you know, 100 miles or more to have this option. So, you know, maybe because of the recent conflicts that we have experienced here in America, that has changed people's perspective on these things. So I encourage you, if you are interested in doing this again, by all means, kind of get your plan in place. And I know Representative Baker said, well, why not Wilmer, to me, just before the meeting, he said. And I said, well, if, you know, this is something you guys are interested in doing, you know, put your plan, you know, get your plan together. So, yeah, so I think you two have a conversation to have.
We need to, yes. So. Madam Chair, if I could just follow up on that.
Yes.
Tricia, we've talked a few times about some of the needs of the veterans here in town. And again, I make myself available because I'd love to get that historical perspective of our former state Majority Leader Johnson, and I'd love to get caught up and see where we need the service, because again, we've got a lot of vets in this area that need a lot of that support. So I stand ready to jump in and help out, and this is an A-plus presentation, and we need to get there. Let's get ready to get up, and I'm there to help you. So anything I can do to help as well.
Representative Miller.
Madam Chair, and everyone at the Representative Adores, because I'm in combative, that is not my intent of what I'm about to say. When this is brought up and they give like this A-plus presentation, even in session last year, we had, well, we can do this too. First of all, there's a lot of communities that can't do this. It's also, I don't know where you're at in the process now, and I don't mean disrespect on this, but if you left this room today and said, you know what, we're gonna effort towards moving towards putting together a presentation that's acceptable to be approved by the state, that's acceptable to move to the federal government, you're probably a couple of years out. Now, I'm not saying that that doesn't mean disqualify you, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't pursue that, but one of the things that continues to happen with this, and this is what I think you've seen over the last 10 years, is this kind of ebbs and flows, and there's more interest, less interest, more interest, less interest, and over 10 years now, we still haven't moved forward as a state. So by all means, if we can come to a conclusion on this rapidly, do I want it to be in Montevideo? Well, that's who I'm here to represent. So believe me, I'm going to fight for the city of Montevideo and the county of Chippewa County. But I want to serve the veterans first and foremost above all. And I know you do. I know everyone else in this room does. What I'd hate to see is that we have another committee hearing out here 6 years from now, and we're having the same discussion saying, well, we have to still decide who it is that wants to do this and what have you. This is not just a time-consuming, I've done a lot of grant proposals and what have you, and sometimes they can take a long time because of writing. It takes a long time to put a document together, an application, it takes even longer. When you look, every single time they had a question, they were given an answer specifically in here. All the support and all that is a very time-consuming thing, and if there's a dedication from other towns to do it, I encourage them to get going, but let's get going.
Well, I think everybody's heart is in the right place, and that's making sure that our veterans who have risked life and limb for us, that they are taken care of. So I don't think anybody argues with that at all. So I appreciate you coming forward. And Mr. Garvey, any comments at all?
Yes, Madam Chair. Going back, what Senator Johnson initially proposed to Wilmer was a TBI clinic, and the federal government would not fund that. But if you'll take a look at page 8, Montevideo is smack dab in the area to be served. If you build in Wilmer, you wouldn't meet the two-hour deadline anymore. You'd be closer than that. You'd be butting up in Minneapolis home. That's why it's located where it's at. Montevideo serves those counties around there to avoid the long driving distance. The CBOC that we got in Montevideo, when we, our economic development director at that time worked very hard on getting that in Montevideo. The doctors in Wilmer didn't want it. I'll be blunt, I'll tell the truth. They didn't want it. We worked very hard. It was fortunate our hospital has sufficient money. They built it and leased it back to the VA. It's been very successful and been growing ever since.
Well,
stick to it out here.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey. And I think for all of this, like I mentioned, a lot of this we are beholden by what the feds decide to do. And whether they move forward, and I think that this being part of the new construction fund, we still have to wait as they do all the health and safety funds to see if there's anything left for new construction. And that's all decided on the federal level. And so I know that I'm certainly going to have conversations with my Congress member. I've encouraged all of the members of the committee as well to have conversations with their congressional delegation to talk about this issue, because we did have in one of the hearings that we had last week the suggestion of giving more flexibility to our veterans to seek care outside of a veteran federally run or state run facility to get them access to care faster, because we're just kind of stuck right now with how the feds respond to things. So looking at a plan B if we can't get plan A, basically, is what we're trying to do. So we're going to keep working on it and see what we can get resolutions on this. And I know Representative Detmer, as the chair of the subcommittee on veterans issues, has been very diligent at looking at these issues, too. And we'll have him discuss some of the things that we've done on the state level, too. So appreciate that. I don't know, Ms. Appledorn, if you have any final comments, or Mr. Kohai, if you have any final comments. If not, we'll kind of...
Madam Chair, could I ask Ms. Appledorn
question? Yes, Representative Carlson.
When you brought up the question of Wilmer, I was sitting here trying to remember some of the history, and I may be confusing or mixing Brainerd and Wilmer, but there was some discussion, I thought, in both instances a few years ago because of the closure of the state hospitals, and that might be an opportunity for conversion. Now, I think I was out here with another committee not too many years ago, that the Wilmer State Hospital site has been pretty much converted to a lot of business activity now, kind of a think tank area and some other businesses there. But I think that was part of what was being discussed a few years ago when they talked about a veterans home, was that location. And I think when we get up to Brainerd, we may hear that issue there as well, because when I was up there a couple, 3 years ago, they were talking about future use of that state hospital site. Now, I don't know whether they were talking about new buildings or reconverting some of the buildings that had been part of the state hospital, but I think that has been part of the discussion when she was asked about the history of may or may not have happened.
Actually, I think what the former legislator was looking to do was that he wanted to keep the mental health facility here in Wilmer. I think you're thinking of Brainerd was the one that they were looking to open it up.
I say I may be mixing the two, but I think there was some discussion about, I thought it was to service veterans out at the old Wilmer site. I shouldn't say old site, it's still there, I guess, but but that's been pretty much redeveloped, whatever those plans were anyway.
Yeah,
but I was just kind of trying to reconstruct what some of that history may have been.
Well, hopefully between Ms. Appledorn and Representative Baker, you guys will be able to kind of fill us in too. Appreciate that. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I think Mr. Johnson pointed out that a lot of this has to do with the federal government. And I know just a few years ago, we had three or four that were, requests were at the federal government, and then they pushed them back to the state because of the federal government only allows us to have so many beds. And I think they reevaluate that every 2 years maybe for states to determine how many beds they really get. And now that we've finished the Minneapolis home and we're looking at 144 beds, I believe that the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs will do their job getting the request back up to the federal government and then making sure that hopefully we can be on a priority list where we can get another veterans home. So, yes.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Garvey.
We'll never get on the federal list until you approve bonding at the local level. Then we can get on the federal list. They pulled them back before, there were too many applications exceeding the bed count. So they pulled them all back and we're starting over. Well, Brainerd, or Montevideo and Bemidji have survived and are still sticking to it. But until we get the bonding, we'll not move forward.
All right, does anybody else wish to testify to this issue at all?
Members of that committee, thank you for the opportunity for the public to attend this official hearing. My name is John Handine from Montevideo. I live 10 miles north of Montevideo on a farm. I farmed for 50 years and retired. I'm a World War II veteran, one of the younger ones. I'm 91 years old. I will call attention that World War II veterans are meeting their eventual demise at the accelerated rate of attrition, national rate, 1,800 a day. I am not appointed officially to speak for their local World War II veterans, but I have confidence enough to assert that I do speak for them in this instance. We are not here testifying for ourselves. If this project is approved, it's doubtful that it will be built and in operation in time for most of us to be beneficiaries of it. However, I think we are volunteering to serve as surrogate spokesman for our fellow veterans, comrade in arms, younger than us, Korea, Vietnam, and the Gulf. We speak for them. Don't be misled by the lack of the attendance of many of the younger veterans. They're busy at their jobs. They couldn't be here. But if we are mostly retired and still able-bodied, we're here. and we're speaking for them largely. The question was brought up, why not subsidize local nursing homes instead of building veterans homes? I will call attention to the fact that many of the ailments are specific to service-connected acute and turning into chronic injuries specifically suffered by veterans and not encountered by the general public. I call attention to possible emphysema, inhaling dust in the desert battle areas of the Gulf Wars, and calling attention to malaria in Vietnam. You never get rid of the organism causing malaria. It reoccurs throughout your life. Agent Orange, carcinogens, many things that are not unique but specific to chronic service-connected ailments, clearly connected to the service of the veterans, and they would not have suffered those injuries had they not been in service, serving in foreign battle areas. The frozen hands and feet of the Battle of the Bulge veterans of World War II and Korea veterans, amputations that were necessary to forego the progression of decay of the flesh. I could go on specifying that there are special injuries that veterans have a chronic and increasing severity as they age that the general public does not have. So I think it justifies the reason for soldiers' homes rather than subsidizing the regular nursing homes. Some questions?
Members, any questions?
Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Handy, and thank you for your service.
Very well put.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify at all? All right.
You got one back.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, if you could come up to the table and just state your name for the record and who you represent. Thank you. Welcome. If you can please state your name and for the record.
My name is Sandy Erickson.
Erickson?
Right. I have three brothers. I'm the only daughter of Richard Erickson of Milan, and so I'm representing the Milan group that's here, the Montevideo group that's here, and the three children in the Montevideo schools. I want to tell you a little story. When I was in Norway in 1984, my dad had a stroke. But my dad had actually been in the military in Wiesbaden, Germany. He had given that time, and he had missed his family. He was away from home at that time. His mother would send cookies to him and mittens to him to help him cope from being away from home. And I want to tell you that as a daughter of a veteran, I watched my mom care for my dad for 30 years after a stroke. I was in Norway when my dad had a stroke. And I want you to know all the times that my mom drove down to the cities to care for my dad, to take him to appointments, to the VA clinic or the hospital in St. Paul, Minnesota. How many times my mom was on the road. My dad is a cancer survivor. He's been a veteran for 3 years, and he's a breast cancer survivor, and he's survived a severe stroke. He's paralyzed. Mm-hmm. I want you to know that Montevideo and Milan are our homes. And that we, when we think of, my dad is 82, my mom is 79. When we think of the time when my dad goes into a nursing home, it's a very sad experience because we remember all those times that we missed our mom when she went down to the cities to pick up We want to be home. We don't, when we go to the Twins game or we go to the Vikings games or the Minnesota Zoo, it's fun to visit, but that's not our home. We want a veterans home where we live, and as the veterans told you, they want veterans together. My dad, many times that he's been in the hospital, struggling, fighting for his life, we would sit by his bedside, and that was the time when we had one-on-one time. Sometimes I'd sleep by my dad's bedside, and he told me stories. And he was a cryptographer, and as we were visiting earlier, there wasn't much my dad could say because it was top secret. Everything was top secret, and he honored that. He loved his country. He also loved his family. He wants to be close to his family. In the last few years of his life, he wants to be close. And I hope you'll consider that. We love the things that are in the Twin Cities. We love to go visit. But we want our veterans to be where our families can visit them.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson, and thank you. You all have made such compelling arguments of why you want to have this close to home. Completely understand it. I want to have my family close to me, too. So appreciate you coming here today. If there is anyone else wishing to testify, come on up. And if there's anybody else that wants to, too, don't hesitate to get in queue, if you will. So. And if you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
My name is Chris LeBeau. I'm the commander of the American Legion Post 59 in Montevideo. I'd like to thank you, Madam Chairman and his members. On my behalf, I'm a combat veteran from Vietnam. I served two tours back to back. I came home with 100% disability. And through the VA system, American Legion, I can somewhat function every day now. And I'm very grateful. And when the gentleman was talking about nursing homes and wanting to privatize them, I know a couple of good fellows. They charge them $8,000 a month just to stay there. That's a disgrace. I'm sure it wouldn't cost $8,000 a month to have a veteran at their own veteran's home. Now, I felt bad for this gentleman. He literally had to give up everything he owned just so he could stay at a privatized nursing home. They took his home, his land, everything. And I look around. Vietnam veterans comprise most of the veterans today. We're the largest group there are. A lot of us have special needs that cannot be filled by privatized hospitals because, as it was mentioned earlier, we have special needs that no hospital can take care of. I can tell this committee, back in May of last year, I was invited to go down and speak to the doctors at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. It was an honor to go and speak to all these doctors. They didn't know me from Adam, but they asked me, tell the story about Vietnam and what happened. And I said, I can tell you one story. 430 lives lost in one day, and almost 5,000 injuries in one battle. Now, those guys that went home had missing limbs and that. They can't get taken care of. They depend on the VA because they're the only ones that can give us special care. And we're honored to have a clinic in Montevideo. I meet many veterans because I travel the state in the summertime. And they ask, where can we go to get help? Why can't we get this? Why can't we get that? I said, well, the only thing is, all we can do is keep asking for better nursing homes and better care. No, it's not. Money is no object, really. But put yourself in our shoes. I served from 1966 to 1991. I'm distinguished service, wounded combat veteran. And it's my freedom that I gave up to make sure you had safe freedom. Is it worth arguing over? I think when you stop and look at it, numbers here, Mr. Garvey has put a lot of effort into this, and so has our communities. And they're here to say, by God, we need to hear somebody down the road say, we want to look at you people and say, you guys need the help. There's a lot of veterans that come from South Dakota to here. They come from North Dakota to here because they need help, and the only place they can get it is here. And I look at the aging veterans just in my post alone. They're all combat veterans. And I know most of them can't afford to go into a privatized nursing home. This is why we need it, so that their special needs can be met just as mine's going to be needed. You know, it's, to me, I'm not a politician, and I never were. But I look at it this way. It's time that those of us that sacrifice get something in return. And we're not asking for the world. We're just asking for a little piece of the pie, and which will benefit not only our community, but the vast amount of veterans in our areas that need this help. You know, it's really sad when it comes down to, well, it's about money or taking care of those that took care of your freedom, which is more important. It's hard to distinguish. I look around this room and I see many of combat veterans I know personally. And it's sad that these folks have to literally sacrifice a lot because they have to drive from Montevideo to the cities, where they got to go to Laverne to a nursing home, which is filled. They'll never get accepted. So I'm just asking, on my behalf, and my comrades, to really reach inside your heart and think, what's more important? These veterans that took care of our freedom and made sure we were safe and be able to do anything we want every day, is it more important to say no to them after they gave so much of their lives to keep this country free? I think not. I think it's time for the state and the feds to step up and say, hey, these guys put their life on the lines. They have injuries that will never heal. Now, isn't it time that we step up to the plate and say, hey, we're going to take care of them? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. LeVeau, and thank you for your service. Really appreciate that. And to that, I think Representative Detmer, maybe you can talk about a little bit of some of the legislation that we have in queue to help those that have served our nation so valiantly. If you can talk about some of the things that we have been able to accomplish here in the last year and what we hope to accomplish this year, too, in addition to looking at this legislation.
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, as I mentioned before, I chair the Veterans Division. We hear most of the veterans' bills that come to the state come through the division, and it goes to state government, finance, or taxes, or other committees. And one piece of legislation that we were able to pass this last session was dealing with veterans-owned small businesses. A lot of veterans that own businesses, to get certified as a veterans-owned small business, you had to go through the federal VA to get certified, to get a preference when you put in bids for state projects. It could be selling paper, pencil, or road construction. It's a variety of state projects. And we've been working on this for years, and we finally now got it approved. And it's in law now that if you own a business, 51% of your business, that you can get certified right here in the state of Minnesota. You take your DD-214 to Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. They verify, yes, you are a veteran. Then you go to the Department of Administration. So it's basically like a one-stop thing to get certified now. You can, through the Department of Administration, they will look at your paperwork that they ask you to fill out about your business, and they can certify you as a veterans-owned small business now. And this is something we've been working on for years. I've been in the legislature now going on 10 years, and we finally got this approved. And I think that that allows, because a lot of your veterans that are coming back now, you know, if they've gone in right after high school, they're now, and they got their, you know, and they're veterans. You know, many of them come back and they want to either go to college, or they want to start a business or get jobs. So these are important aspect. Another thing was I mentioned the veterans coming back, men and women coming back, and they want to go on to college. Well, Minnesota, in order to get some of the grants and things that college that we provide for our veterans, you had to live here for 12 months. Okay, so the problem is if you are enrolled in college and you weren't able to apply for some of these different grants that veterans would get because you didn't live here for 12 months. Well, the piece of legislation that we passed, now as long as you are drilling, you're drilling with the National Guard or Air National Guard, and you live in Minnesota, you already you qualify immediately for some of these different programs. And another thing that we were able to work on this year, and it's in the tax bill. Minnesota is only one of six states that still tax our veterans' retirement pay. We have 369,000 veterans that live in Minnesota currently. Only 19,000 of those are retired veterans that have 20 years in, or medically retired, or some have maybe 18 years and they got an early out, but they're drawing a retirement. Minnesota is one of only six states that still tax that military retirement. We have that phase. We're phasing that out in the tax bill. So if you have 20 years in, it's $1,000 per year, capped at $20,000. So when you do your taxes, you can write off $20,000 off your gross income. And why do we want to do that? Well, other states have figured it out, that if you draw veterans into your state that are career veterans that have retired as a veteran, most of them are in their 40s, if they went in right after high school, they're going to have second careers. They're going to get jobs or start companies. They're going to buy homes. They're going to, now they're the GI Bill that they have, now their spouse and their kids can use that for college. And also their TRICARE, their health benefits come with them into the state. So a lot of federal money comes into the state when a veteran retires here in our state. And we don't always have the best weather for people that retire here, but I tell you, something like this will help to bring those skill sets that those veterans have learned over 20 years, their leadership skills. These are types of people companies want to hire, and we want to keep those people here in the state of Minnesota. Wisconsin got rid of that tax years ago. Iowa just got rid of that tax 2 years ago. South Dakota, of course, doesn't have that tax. So I think this is something that we can really look forward to of getting the tax bill through. And there's many other pieces of legislation that we hear, and I make a habit of allow anybody that brings legislation is from both sides of the aisle that we, in the Veterans Division, we listen and we talk about these issues. I also, the Military Action Group, it's a think tank for military issues. We meet at least once a month, and it's a nonpartisan group of people that get together, and we talk about veterans issues, and a lot of legislation comes out of that Military Action Group. So, Madam Chair, those are just some of the things, and I'm open for questions, too.
And I want to thank Representative Miller, Mr. Garvey, Ms. Steinbach. You guys have given an excellent presentation. It's everything that I would expect anybody that's really prepared and shovel ready to come to the legislature. And I can't thank you enough. This is fantastic what you've done. You have certainly done your homework. and that makes it even easier for you as you move forward in this process. So I appreciate the time and energy that you've spent. I appreciate all the comments, Mr. Handeem, Ms. Erickson, Mr. LeBeau. Everything that you have said today has been fantastic feedback. If there is anyone else that wants to speak to this piece of legislation or on veteran issues in general, please feel free to come up to the table. We wanted to come to here, wanted to make it easier for you guys, because I know I've driven the route from St. Paul to Monty to visit. I had an aunt and uncle that lived in Montevideo for many, many years, and that's not a fun drive. So there's not enough music in the world to keep that going. So appreciate you guys at least driving here to meet us somewhat halfway, if you will. So, Mr. Garvey.
Madam Chair, in case you're wondering, this is not a door prize. My wife likes to crochet, and she started this a couple of weeks ago, and she said, this goes to the first veteran in the Montevideo nursing home. It's a lap rug.
Lovely. Oh, that is so sweet. Thank you. Yeah.
So we expect that to happen this coming year.
Yes. Anybody else wish to speak at all? Sure, come on up, please.
Hello.
Hi,
my name is Deborah Lee Fader. I'm the mayor of Montevideo, and so I speak for the people from Montevideo. We have a servant heart. We are a grateful and a loving, a forgiving, and a generous people. We pray desperately for this veterans home to be made possible. We love our veterans, and they love us back every day. We thank them for their service, and we thank you all for listening to all of the drama that we've been able to unfold here today. All of it in truth, all of it in the name of our country. God bless you all.
Thank you, Ms. Fader. Anybody else wishing to speak? I saw. There you are. Thank you. Come on up.
My name is Sheldon Olson. I represent Yellow Mesa County. I'm the commander of the Clarkville Legion. I've been there for 9 years. My dad is in the nursing home. He's a veteran too. And it costs nearly $9,000 a month for us. So, and we're about to lose the farm because we can't afford it. So, sorry if I'm getting a little emotional, but sometimes I get up, I'm a little hothead too. So, and something I heard about Wilmer years ago, they wanted it just for research. So if that's true or not, I apologize, but I just wanted to say, I just done the taxes for my parents and it doesn't look good. So that's why I'm here to support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Appreciate that. Anyone else wishing to speak? Welcome. If you can state your name for the record.
Tom Anderson, veteran from 1974 to 1998. So as I looked around the room, I'm probably one of the youngest ones. What Mr. Handeem said about he's trying to pave the way for the younger ones. I was the first group that did not have to register for the draft. I didn't have to wear the uniform. I chose to. All these people are my friends. If they weren't veterans, they probably have no reason to sit down and visit with them. I've been to the Laverne nursing home. A whole lot different walking in there than to some other nursing home. Talked about the long fight. Some people think Mr. Garvey can be kind of rough and gruff. If this isn't done, and he's no longer to carry on, I'll be here to carry the fight. Because that's what veterans do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thank you for your service. Appreciate it. Representative,
could we get some clarification? Is the Laverne site actually a nursing home?
Yes.
No, it's
a veterans home.
Veterans.
And is that the same? It means the same thing. Veterans home is a nursing home,
a veterans home is for veterans.
Yes.
It's a skilled
nursing care.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, as Mr. Handeen pointed out, if they had an injury that they sustained during combat, the personnel that are there are trained to recognize those injuries and provide treatment. Anyone else? Thank you for the gracious reception that all of you gave us here today. We really appreciate it. And as I mentioned earlier, if you didn't feel comfortable speaking to us today, please do not hesitate to reach out to us via phone, letter, email. We've got Representative Miller, Representative Baker here too, and we will be going to talk to our congressional delegation as well as looking at this issue greater at the state level too. So thank you so much for your hospitality. And with that, we are adjourned.